everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass, and I am here with Amy Leo Barankovich today. We're going to be talking about her journey into vegan cooking and veganism and her current passion, vegan affairs. Hi, Amy Leo.
Hello. How are you?
Good. Tell me about your name, Amy Leo.
Well, my birth name is Amy, and my confirmation name is Leo, and I chose that just because I loved the name Leo, and I happen to be a Leo. And so I would go by Amy Leo, and I started dating someone a number of years back, and he just started calling me Amy Leo all the time, and I had friends calling me that, and just like the sound of it, I was ready for some kind of a switch of my name, but I didn't really want to tear it up by the roots, so I just decided to together and make it all one word.
So. Nice. It's musical.
Yeah. Thank
Amy
you.
Leo. Very good. Okay. Tell me about you and your journey.
Oh boy. So my journey into veganism. Well, I'll start way back, but it will be short. I promise I won't bore you with details for 60 years of my life. I was born as one of those people that just never liked to eat animals. I just didn't. And I, as a child, it never occurred to me that I didn't have to. So we're talking about being raised in the 60s, right? Like, unless you're in sort of a hippie family, you just sort of eat whatever's on the table. And then one day, one of my sisters came storming through the door, absolutely horrified by what she had seen with live chickens being transported. And all she had to do was share her image, and we literally both became vegetarian overnight. And then at the age of 13, I started cooking for my family of 10 because I got grounded for doing bad things. And it turned out that 2 years later, that's what happened 2 years later, I became vegetarian. So I had already been set up cooking on my own. And it just worked out beautifully to eat vegetarian. And oh my gosh, 15 years later, I realized if I'm vegetarian for the animals, it really only made sense to be vegan for the animals. Because I think a big misconception out there is because the animal doesn't get killed for the milk, that it's okay. Well, the animal does get killed ultimately after being forced for many years, right, to endure these horrific conditions that are just the same as what the animals that are immediately being killed for their flesh. So it was kind of a no-brainer at that point. I had joined up with the Animal Rights Coalition, and it just, I didn't have an excuse any longer. to not go vegan. So that's
yeah,
how that
our timeline is very similar, actually. I'm 61 and kind of went through a similar timeline.
Huh.
From vegetarian to vegan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sweet. Yes. Yeah. Long haul. I realized, and I suppose that's true for you too, that I have now been vegan for half of my life.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I went in 88.
Yeah. So vegan for half my life and then not eating animal flesh for 3/4 of my life.
Right.
So, and I'm obviously alive and well, so, as you are.
Yes. It's the same for me. And going through a supermarket, for example, there's just so many things there that I don't see as food. I don't miss, I don't look at, I don't need. And it's hard sometimes trying to relate to people who are just discovering this to really be in their shoes and empathize with them because I've been away from it so long. And when people say it's so hard and I think it's so easy, I don't see any of that other stuff as food.
I relate to that completely. It's just, it's not food. When I was vegetarian, it was really clear that the flesh isn't food.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting to watch milk, cow's milk, and products that are made from that to just fall off my radar as food.
We were just texting with my partner Gary's nephew, who's in college, and he's taking an ethics class. And he's a really bright kid. And, well, he's not a kid anymore, he's 20. And he's always been naturally spiritual. I don't know how to explain it. Anyway, he's just sent us some messages about what he's reading in one of Peter Singer's books.
Ooh.
And the word speciesism, it's just a word that isn't in most people's vocabulary. It's a concept that when we have the blinders on, we don't have any feeling for. And then when someone mentions it and you take it in and realize what it is, the world explodes. there's so many things you haven't thought about that all of a sudden the world is different.
It is. And I think also that could become a real threat to people. I remember many years ago when I first started using the word, because it makes sense. You think, okay, let's look at this other perspective here that we've had our eyes closed to. There was a woman who was currently in medical school, and boy, did she jump down my throat. Mm. She just, you know, I was trying to inflate things and sensationalize, and I was just stunned. I was like, wow, here is a very reasonable perspective to look at. We have sexism and ageism and racism. Why does that not make sense in an intelligent brain? But it can become a threat, because then, as you know, all of a sudden you have to start looking at your life, what's the word I'm looking for? Your lifestyle, your habits. And then, ooh, if something starts sounding a little off, you've got to make those changes. And that's, so many people are still incredibly resistant to that.
When you have a foundation that's based on certain truths, mm-hmm. and then you realize those truths aren't true, it can be very unsettling.
Very unsettling. Yes.
Anyway, and so you made these discoveries, which is great. And now you're incorporating it into your entire lifestyle as a business?
Absolutely. Yes. And it's pretty funny. I chuckle when I think, you know, you look at how things start. So I got grounded at the age of 13, which was starting me cooking. And then I had that skill set when I went vegetarian. And then that's just what I did. I mean, way back when I became vegetarian, when I became vegan, you basically had to cook everything yourself. Now there's all these other options out there. And I'd bring stuff to potlucks and people, you know, they weren't vegetarian, they weren't vegan. And they're just, oh my God, this is so delicious. Can I have the recipe? You need to start teaching. And I really didn't want to, because while I love to cook, I didn't want to cook all the time. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, this is a way I can really make a difference. And there was a woman who was in a class I was taking that she had a very strong Southern accent, just like this, you know. she and her kids really didn't like the idea of eating animals and their products, but she didn't know how to move away from that. So she was like, Amy Leo, you want to teach vegan cooking classes? And I was like, no. She said, come on, Amy Leo, you want to make a difference and I'm looking for some help. Like, literally, it sounded like that. I was like, oh my God, she is exactly right. I can do this. So I have been a micropreneur for most of my life, and it was just stuff that I tended to be good at, but I wasn't really passionate about. I did cleaning, I did organizing. Gardening was fun, but I wasn't that skilled at it to really make a real living, like as a landscaper. And I thought, you know, here I have years of experience of cooking. I really want to see people get animals and their products off the plate. It just, again, it was this no-brainer. So that literally was the start of it. So now I teach both private and public cooking classes, except for those that are on pause right now, mm-hmm. are my personal chef services. And then I coach people in the plant-based eating. And I've also, it's to sort of fill in the financial gaps between that, I am a brand ambassador for a number of local vegan products. So it's been a nice, it feels really kind of comprehensive, if that's the word I want to use. Many different ways of working with encouraging people to eat plant-based. So it feels good. Like, I don't really get bored, because there's all these different aspects, these different ways that I could work with it. And I love seeing people light up when they see new ways to work with food mm-hmm. that are percent plant-based.
Absolutely. Especially now, it's a very challenging time with the pandemic, mm-hmm. a pandemic that some of us know is caused because we eat animals and we confine animals. And that's where all of these zoonotic diseases have come from. It's very frustrating to see people with chronic diseases that we know are preventable and reversible, and to see them suffer.
Yes.
And I think most vegans, I can't speak for all of us, are sensitive. And yes, we're sensitive about animals and we don't want them to suffer, but we're also sensitive about people. People always say, you know, why you care so much about animals? Why don't you care about people? Well, we do care about people. We care about everybody. We care about the planet, people, non-human animals, and we don't want anybody to feel pain and suffer.
Well, yes, I agree with that completely. And one thing I want to point out to listeners is there is this concept of vegans, like whatever people's perceptions are, right? We're kind of these off the wall, radical, fill in the blank, right? And people often think that veganism is just about the diet, just about the food that we put in our mouths. And that's not true, as you know. It's really more about how can we in our daily lives not contribute to pain and suffering? How can we create the least amount of suffering in our world? And no one can walk a life without having any kind of pain and suffering as a result of whatever their choices are. You know, you walk on the ground and you're going to step on an ant or whatever it might be. Something is going to transpire that's not the best for everyone around us just because we're an animal that's walking through life. And I think that it's important to recognize that as a person who's living a vegan lifestyle, it really is about doing the best that we can and honestly doing the best that we can, not just pretending we are and saying we are. What does everything I am doing, how does that impact the next being, the next person, the environment? And so it's a lifestyle. It's very comprehensive, and it takes a lot of consciousness to walk through that.
I mentioned the pandemic, and you had written to me that maybe we could talk about what's going to happen after, when we get through this. What's on the other side? Are we going back to normal? Everyone wants to go back to normal. Normal is not necessarily a good thing.
It's not. And, you know, there's so much I could say about that. And I really want to focus on a level of literal insanity about how we're operating in the world around our relationship with animals. And that's where I want to focus on what we're in and why I don't want to go back to that. But before I get there, I just want to point out some other things. It's so much more than just what we're eating. It's like the environment's cleaning up in certain places. So when we're through this, how can we look at what behaviors do we change so that we can keep the canals in Italy clean? So that, I don't know, have you seen the pollution maps over China?
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing how quickly things are cleaning up from no activity.
A matter of weeks, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not all going to stay in our homes and not be in our cars forever. And there's got to be something else we can do that doesn't return to that. Mm-hmm. That polluted mess, we're still in a lot of it. But like, why would we want to return to that when we're a smart species, we could do something other than?
I don't know if we're a smart species. That's very generous of you.
It is, and I actually, you'll catch me not agreeing with that statement later on as I'm talking,
because okay.
we have a certain level of intelligence, but then how does that go? Are we smart or are we intelligent? I'm not sure which one it is.
Yeah, I was just talking again to our nephew who was talking about Peter Singer, and I brought up the word instinct. It's one of those words that drives me crazy, because instinct is intelligence we don't understand.
Yes.
And so many people use it in an insulting manner. Oh, that's instinct. You know, they don't know any better. It's instinct.
Yeah.
They do know better.
A lot better. Speaking of instinct, my kitty cat is demanding that he can look out the windows. So I had to just adjust.
Oh,
I totally get that. But there's the pollution thing, right? And then we're so financially driven. One of the things I'm fascinated by right now is looking at the economic situation that we're in. And again, we need to go back to something, or we need to go somewhere other than where we are right now. But this is a moment where we get to create. How do we create so we can be economically viable? And I don't have the answers for that, but I think these are questions we need to entertain. How do we create it so that it's economically viable, but we're not so maniacal about like that? I mean, look at the GDP. That is what the well-being of the world is based on.
Yeah, which is not a good meter to measure. Yeah,
exactly. Well, that's part of why we're dealing with the pollution that we're dealing with.
We don't even include the value of people growing food, their own food. We don't include that as something of value. And when everything else fails and we can't grow food, that's the most valuable thing there is.
That's a problem. And this, I wish I had more specifics on this. but this was well before this pandemic surfaced. It was something about some government was looking at trying to figure out how they can charge individuals who are growing their food for the rain that fell on their property.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Now they wanted to make it illegal to collect rainwater.
Yes. Mm-hmm. In my mind, okay, no, that is not an intelligent species. That's a problematic, that's a seriously problematic.
That's us.
Behavior.
That's humanity. Cheers.
You know, all of this, I think it's, I'll probably say this, you know, 50 times on this show, is we are standing in such a perfect moment to change the course of humanity, to change the course of our evolution, to undo a lot of the damage that we have done to the environment and to the other beings that are on this earth. And my biggest fear is we're not going to learn that, because we haven't learned it in the past. Look, how many pandemics have we had in the past?
Another point that you had brought up to me about what might happen after this pandemic is the idea of slowing down.
Yes.
Taking time to be and find ourselves, you wrote me. What does that look like, and how do we even conceive of something like that?
And I think your question is sadly a question that needs to be asked, because we're living in such a fast-paced world that notion is hard for people to actually grasp. For me personally, as much as I really oppose this fast-paced world, I find my mind gets caught up in thinking I have to do more. You know, it's sort of like the water that I'm swimming in, even
though yes,
the approach I prefer. So one of the things I'm working on is how to just be with what is. And I'll say more about what I mean. I'm not waking up to an alarm clock these days. I don't, you know, my work has been stopped, right? So anything I do, my paid work, my appointments, that's just all been stopped. So I'm on my own time. And I am really working on how do I just be with the day that can move fluidly and have a quote purpose, right? I mean, I don't have to have a goal. My purpose in life is always to be gentle and kind and loving and living from that place. So I don't want to erase that, but I don't have goals. I don't have to continuously set timelines and deadlines. And when you're not living from that place, my experience is an almost sort of like an automatic pause comes about, but I have to be tapped into that pause to know that it's there. Mm. And just really allow myself to be with what's in my heart, what's in my mind, that's not the external telling me what I should be doing, what I need to be doing, what's the right or what's the wrong. Mm-hmm. And then it's with myself. I heard someone, oh my gosh, was that on one of your shows when you were saying, if you can't be outside, go inside?
Oh yeah, we said that, yeah.
And I was like, oh my God. So sort of, it sounds so simple, but it really is quite profound.
Mm-hmm.
And I think now what I do want to say, there's some of us who, it seems like people are either really free of time, free of their work, or people are overloaded. It's almost like feast or famine. You know, I have a friend who's working with a women's organization that is with small businesses. And so they are just crunched. They're just working almost 24/7, right? Whatever they need to keep in order with all of their clients. And of course, anyone in the healthcare industry. So
oh, please, I don't know how they're managing and how they're going to keep on.
Right. I mean, seriously, I saw something the other day. Not all heroes wear capes.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, here in New York, it's nothing like we've ever seen.
Mm-hmm. So there's that. And I want to acknowledge for those people, I'm very grateful for the work they're doing. They're so stressed. And then there are people who have a tremendous amount of time at their hands. And that's where I'm speaking of, you know, going in and being able to find yourself. And we can't find ourselves when we have continuous outside voices blasting at us and telling us what to do and how to be. And so it's a really beautiful moment in history where we can capture that and do that. I think it would be, for me personally, I do not want to come out on the other side of this, not having given myself that gift, that opportunity to know how to slow down and continue that slowing down when I'm on the other side.
I've read some articles where people are saying, don't stress out that you're not able to keep a busy schedule because there's this overwhelming shadow right now and lots of anxiety. Many people just can't get themselves going. And I've talked to some friends about this. Point is, don't worry. You don't have to keep going. And maybe this is a way people can navigate what they should be doing or how to slow down and really figure out what it is that they want to do during their day. I'm lucky. I always like to say I'm lucky. I'm living in the epicenter of the pandemic, but I'm lucky because I'm used to working from home and I'm used to having a very fluid schedule. And I have woken up many mornings to say, I am so grateful I don't have to wake to an alarm clock. Yeah. Because we're not designed for that.
I saw a sleep show a number of years ago and it makes so much sense. It's like, duh, why did I need to hear this from a sleep expert? If we're waking up to an alarm clock, we are sleep deprived. Mm-hmm. It can wake you up unnaturally. When you were talking about people working on not being stressed out, what I've recognized, because I tend to run anxious. It's just, I have an anxious nature to myself. There's something about this pause that has given me permission to actually be in a pause. Where if I would try to take that pause outside of something like this, I would have anxiety about taking the pause. Mm-hmm. It's interesting to see that there is a level of calm and level of permission, a level of it is okay for me to not have a day where I'm checking off my checklist.
It's a strange thing how life can do that to us. Now it's happening globally with this pandemic, but something like that also happens when we're in a life-threatening crisis or a disease where you have to focus on staying alive and everything else all of a sudden drops away, meaningless. And then when we get over it, do we go back to normal or do we learn from that?
Right. Do we go back to, or do we create something new and beautiful? Mm-hmm. Something else that's interesting before I do want to speak about this insanity piece I keep talking about.
Okay.
Is in some odd way in this moment of isolation, I actually feel oddly more connected to my community and to the world because I know what's being asked of me, of us, and I'm doing that. I'm honoring that very, I take that very seriously. And it's just, you think of all the other people on my street. I think of all the other people in my city, in the state, in this country, world. And there's a very, it's a warm feeling.
Yeah.
It's interesting because it's in such a crisis. It feels like I shouldn't be feeling that, right? And every moment that is put before us, every situation that we're in, whether it's small, big, tragic, beautiful, we get to learn something. We get to have a lesson in that. And that's what I'm choosing to do.
Yeah, there's something interesting how it's bringing us all together, whether it's the 7 p.m. cheering sessions that some of us participate in, especially here in New York City, which are really profound, and looking around at all the buildings and you see the people around you that are out of their window or on their terrace, or you see your neighbors on the terraces around you, and we're all together just hoping.
Yeah.
And so grateful for the people that are out there at the front line. It's bringing us together. And I'm in touch with people all over the world that I'm friends with, you know, checking in on people and hearing about their experiences. It's making the world very small.
Right. It is. And I was actually, I would be in Paris right now, speaking of the world. I have a sister who's been living over there for, oh my gosh, probably 35 years now. Mm-hmm. Had my trip planned over there. And so we're spending a little bit more time on FaceTime just because, like, we're supposed to be with each other.
Well, things are crazy in Paris. I'm sure she's told you.
So they are locked in. Like, they don't. She was surprised when I told her I was going out for walks and I had my boat out on one of the local lakes. She was surprised. And I said, at this point in time, you know, we have the space for that. We're not that crowded where streets and you're just forced to be close to each other.
Yeah. So tell me about this.
It's insanity.
This, yes.
It's going to take a little bit to paint a picture. As a vegan, as a person who has been promoting plant-based eating for 45 years or at least 30, one of the things I cannot help but be present to is what was the start of this? It is eating animals. Mm-hmm. They say insanity is trying to do the same thing over and over again and get different results, right? So here's a little picture. So the world gets sick from something. yet again. And the severity of the sickness causes global economic and social stress. So that it's really changing people's lives. But we don't focus on the root cause of this. I mean, media doesn't address that. Politicians don't address it. When you have someone who is audacious enough to actually address that, they are claimed to be selfish and pushing their personal opinions. With all of this going on, we continue to eat the very thing that caused the problem. And we invest a lot of money and energy into a treatment, not focusing on the prevention. That to me is a lineup of a sense of insanity. And that's exactly what we're doing, right? Yep. If you look at the past, I'm not an expert on this, but this is just what I'm gathering, things I've seen from the World Health Organization, the Centers for Disease Control, and other organizations who are more well-versed on this. You look at the past couple decades, we're sitting at COVID-19, which has been thought to have started by eating bats and or pangolins. Mm-hmm. If I'm saying that right, I don't know if I ever say that right. AIDS is connected to consuming or somehow being in contact with these animals. So AIDS is related to monkeys, the avian flu, chickens, and possibly turkeys. Ebola has been associated with the consumption or handling of bats. SARS with the civet cat and two other small mammals. And some of this information might be wrong again, but it's the general concept that I'm really reaching at. Mm-hmm. It's with camel's milk and the swine flu, obviously pigs, right? We also know that eating animals is and their products is directly related to an increase in these types of illnesses. Obesity, heart disease, cancer, arteriosclerosis, hypertension, osteoporosis, one could go on and on, right? And so instead of looking at like what is the problem, we're now looking at creating a vaccine. That's a long-term process. And we're testing on the very beings who created us to get sick in the first place.
That's so insanity.
My thought is, if any other product other than pharmaceutical, that company, that product, that industry would be closed down in an instant. I don't know what more to say other than that's a pretty grim picture. And that's what we are in. And going back to what you said, my biggest fear is that we're not going to learn from this because we've been here so many times before.
Yeah, there is that. So we can only hope. And this has been a frustration with people in the plant-based community forever. Whenever the light goes on and you realize you're eating animals and how animals are connected to all the ills in society, it's not the animals' fault, it's how humans exploit them. And you see in front of you people that you love, people that you care about getting sick, and they won't listen to you. I can cure you. You don't have to go through this. And they don't believe it. They don't want to know. Medical professionals aren't taught what they need to be taught. They're taught a lot of wonderful things. There's no question about it. If I break a bone, you know, I'm glad to be in this country where they have some great methods and technology to repair. But when it comes to chronic diseases, it's a disaster. I'd like to think it's getting better. There's some hope there. And will we have the time, or will the earth just take over with pandemics and climate change? You know, we don't know, but we do the best we can, right? Yeah. And have hope.
Yeah. Yeah.
And teach people how to cook.
And teach
healthy
people how
food.
To cook. And as much as, you know, I keep putting myself in the position to get smacked around, for lack of a better term, by bringing these points that I just made in some capacity, to bring that up to people and hope that they'll be willing to engage in that conversation, but it's shut down.
Mm-hmm.
Made a post on, it's a platform called Neighborhood Next Door Neighborhood. I don't know if you guys have that out there. And it's kind of like, I kind of equate it to Facebook, but for a neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
for neighborhoods. And people were talking about how this one meat shop was out of all of their meat. And I'm like, okay, guys.
This is an opportunity.
Gentle about it. I was like, so here is something to consider. And I think I even sent out a link to an article. Let's just think about this. Like, this is what has caused all these pandemics. I was smeared.
Yeah.
I was a bad person because I'm trying to close down a business and I'm trying to push my personal opinion. I'm like, this is not just my personal opinion. And I said, you know, the personal choice for millions of people to eat animals has brought us here. So why is that personal choice okay?
Hello.
But the personal key to that.
Really good. Flip it. Yeah. Because when you have the blinders on, you can't see. Sometimes it takes a serious event like this to make change. And I'm just hopeful that we'll see change. Definitely Zoom, I think, has changed a lot of the way people will conduct meetings and will educate. There are a lot of things that have been changed through creativity in a very short amount of time. So we need to keep creating.
We do.
Yeah.
We are a creative species. You might argue whether we're intelligent or whether we're smart, but we are definitely creative. You look at the creativity now. You know, look what's happening with who's making these masks. My niece, I was just on
I love that.
Call with my niece, and she is a costume designer. Mm. And it's the school for a school, and that's closed down right now. So what they did as a school collectively, they took, they paid all of their employees that had that skill to sew masks for one of the little
schools. That's nice.
That's creative.
That's very nice. Yeah, I've seen masks made out of socks, the bra cups.
I have seen.
There's so many great things. Vacuum cleaner bags.
PETA actually has this one, makes me laugh. It's the mask that's made out of a thong underwear.
Oh, good. Okay. Yeah, perfect.
A message.
Why not? Well, we're all learning how to shift a little to see things in a different light. Yeah, not just for masks, but let's hope for all life and our lifestyle.
I think if we don't have that hope, I know for myself, if I don't have that hope, then I've given up. I choose to not live from that place, because then that's misery. Can't see hope, then I might as well just check out.
Well, if people want to find out more about you and Vegan Affairs and the work that you do in your neighborhood, which is Minneapolis?
Yep.
Yeah. Where do they find you?
Oh, they can find me on my website, which is obviously www.veganaffairs.org.
Okay, veganaffairsmn.org. What does the MN stand for?
Soda.
Oh, Minnesota. Very good. I always confuse all the M states and their abbreviations.
All right, yeah. It's M-E, I think.
Maine.
So this has been lovely. I really appreciate
it. Yes. I'm glad that Gabrielle Cushy connected us. She's a very, very dear friend.
Yeah.
And an expert in the plant-based eating world and macrobiotics.
Absolutely.
Yes. And also, she sent me a wonderful breathing exercise that I've been sharing with everyone. I don't know if you've tried it, but it's this Kriya breathing exercise. And the idea, I mentioned it last week on the program, so you might check that out. But just to remind people, the coronavirus, in addition to being devastating, it creates a lot of fluid in our lungs if it graduates to a very serious point. And some people are recommending doing exercises to expand the lungs, strengthen the lungs, so that if you are unfortunately experiencing that kind of symptom, your lung can be strong enough to withstand it, hopefully, while your immune system kicks in and kicks it out.
Breathe, drink water. I've been doing fresh squeezed orange juice or grapefruit juice every day. And oh my God, do I feel like I'm waking up into a world of bounty.
That's nice if you can find the orange and grapefruits.
Well,
yes, it's a good thing to do.
We have them plentiful here.
Yeah. Okay. Consider your good fortune.
I will.
Yeah. And Amy Leo, it's been a pleasure talking with you. I'm so glad you're on the planet and doing what you're doing. So thank you for joining me today on It's All About Food.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure, and I'm looking forward to listening to more of your shows.
Okay. Be well. I enjoyed that conversation. Always good to speak with someone who's on a similar journey, doing wonderful things for humanity, making healthy, nutritious, delicious food for our planet. Let's continue that conversation. Gary DiMattei, you know, that's how we live our life all the time, right?
Yeah, 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 Karen.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Here we are in the Responsible Eating and Living pandemic headquarters.
That was a great talk you had with Amy.
Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah.
We do a lot of our own recipes here at Responsible Eating and Living. We do a lot of videos. How-to videos. I heard you talking about how-to videos in the conversation you had with Amy.
Yes.
We're seeing a lot of videos now since folks have been in quarantine, haven't we?
Yes. And, you know, kind of points out how important electricity is
For example, we just had this massive storm here in New York a few days ago, and my brother lost power for a couple of days.
Yeah, he's up.
How do you watch videos when you don't have electricity?
Well, let's hope they have a generator or solar power. Let's talk a little about solar power.
Let's talk about it.
This is called responsible eating and living, and that would certainly qualify under the living category.
Absolutely.
So how do people live without electricity? Or as you would say here on the East Coast,
electricity.
Actually, no, that's not true. It's not just exclusively East Coast jargon. My cousin Nancy says electricity.
She does not.
Yes, she does.
Oh, I thought that was just
an
East
Coast thing. It's a West Coast
thing, too. That was one of the first things you pointed out about how I spoke.
Electricity.
Electricity. And you said milk.
And I said M-E-L-K, which I'm hip now because there's a lot of plant-based.
Vegan milk is now called milk.
It's called M-E-L-K.
Okay, we're really...
But, I mean, what else are we going to babble about? We've been in quarantine now for, I've been here 4 weeks.
Yes.
I'm going on 4 weeks where I haven't left the building.
So I call this Responsible Eating and Living Pandemic Headquarters, also calling it our Responsible Eating and Living Homesteading Center.
So I was about to say, I should have been up shooting a video of you this morning. Let our listeners know what you've been up to since you... woke at
Well, I'm committed, as you know, to keeping a good supply of yogurt in the house, because you when you make yogurt, the best way to do it is to use a starter from your last batch. I'd rather not buy probiotics from a pharmaceutical company all the time. I like to make my own bugs, and I find the batch gets better and better as you use your own yogurt.
And bugs are important.
The good bugs. Are you a good bug? Or a bad bug.
Now, we're talking a lot about the little virus bugs that are going around, but we're talking, now you're talking about...
The good bacteria that
there is good bacteria.
That are healthy to have in our gut.
Right.
So I like to keep the yogurt flowing, and so it was time to make another batch. So I made some yogurt this morning. It's incubating as we speak. And then, since we haven't been shopping...
Per se...
Well, we've had some deliveries of fresh produce for the most part, but I tried to stock our pantry of dried goods a month ago with a lot of stuff. But we are out of soy milk. Bum, ba-dum, bum.
Yeah, I drink a lot of soy milk.
Yeah, and we've been buying the bricks unsweetened, primarily from Trader Joe's. West Soy has the better brand of unsweetened soy milk, which contains just organic soybeans and water. But you may know that I started making soy milk a while ago, and then one of my wonderful listeners directed me to Miyoko's Homemade Vegan Pantry, which we always love to talk about.
Yeah, we talk about that book a lot.
And it's great, especially now that we're home and we may be running out of staples. And Miyoko actually is doing a video every week, a cooking demo on how to make things. Bless her while she's at home. She's awesome.
Yes.
So we had some soybeans left, and I thought, okay, it's time to make soy milk again. Well, this time, not only did I know how to not get the paint smell by boiling the beans first, you shouldn't soak them, because if you soak them cold overnight or for a few hours, then you get the paint smell. So you want to just plop them right in boiling water, and then... proceed with soy milk instructions. If you're interested, I can tell you about that. But we got a nut milk bag.
Yeah, and I had an opportunity to help squeeze out the soy milk, and the leftover in the bag is called...
Okara.
Okara.
Okay, we got our best batch of okara. We got a best batch of soy milk. So I made soy milk today and yogurt. So we're homesteading.
Didn't John tell you about the nut milk bag?
John Phillips,
yeah,
he did.
Lovely John. Thank you, John, for that. That was a lot of fun this morning to be kneading the nut milk bag.
It's messy.
It was fun.
And I can see how people would say, too much trouble.
Yeah, which is the reason why I didn't video you doing it, because our hands were covered with okara.
Okara.
There has to be some song out there about okara. With the okara, you can make, and I know we've talked about this before, but just as a reminder to our new listeners, in case there are any new listeners out there.
Hi.
Hi, new listeners. Welcome to the show. No, seriously, you can make a lot of stuff out of the okara, which to me looks like tofu, but It's not. It's the leftover bean. It's
the fiber-ish
stuff.
The fiber
of the bean.
Yeah.
Yeah, but you can put it in, you can make crackers out of it, which you've done.
Yes.
And we're going to try.
We're going to try and make some more crackers.
You could add it to soup.
Yes, it makes a nice creamy thickener for soup.
Yes. I'm excited to do that. We're getting our veggies today.
Oh, gosh. Where are you getting your fresh produce during this pandemic? Now, some people, it may not be that difficult, but here in the epicenter.
It's difficult. I was just reading a story going around about the details of this virus. We always want to touch on artists at home. And Danny Burstein and several members of the cast of Moulin Rouge received, before they shut down, were exposed to the virus. And Mr. Burstein's account of getting the virus is an unbelievably harrowing account. It's just...
Danny Bernstein is a major Broadway star.
Yes, he is. And we are giving a shout out to him and everyone who was infected by this virus. I just read what Danny went through, and I can't imagine what it must be like. It's just horrible.
You know what's frustrating, Gary? So here we are, we're in the epicenter. We see it all around us. We know what's going on in the hospitals. We have friends who are in the healthcare industry who share with us their horror stories. And yet there are people in the alternative health movement who aren't here. And they're kind of spreading these conspiracy theories about how this isn't really a pandemic.
Yeah.
And that people are dying of things they would have died of anyway. And homeless people are filling up the cadavers you see piled up in that they don't have room to put. This is real.
This is real. Stay home. That's what this article, Danny was trying to let everyone know.
There may be hospitals that aren't packed in other places.
Right.
But here, where there are more cases than anywhere, the people that are working in the hospitals are beyond overwhelmed.
Yes. Stay home. This is real. This is happening. Don't go out. And, you know,
if we had a federal government that could have coordinated this a little better, we might have been able to balance out the hospitals around the country and the workforce to make it more manageable. And they're doing that a little bit in New York, but it's real.
Yeah.
Stay home. Wash your hands.
And homestead. So back to what we were talking about. A lot of folks are videoing in their homes. And if I had a video camera handy during your homesteading spree this morning, it would have been a wonderful video. So you woke up, you started making yogurt.
Yes.
And we're talking about a cashew yogurt now, folks. We're not talking about a dairy yogurt. So, and we have that recipe. You put it up on the Responsible Eating and Living website. And then you next, or simultaneously with the yogurt, started making your own soy milk.
And I was also making a new batch of distilled water.
Distilled
I kind of like to multitask.
Ladies and gentlemen, moms and dads, kids at home, this was unbelievable to wake up to this morning, to see Karen just lighten up the kitchen with all of these wonderful...
I want to talk about this past week, which is holidays, okay?
Right.
So I'm not a religious person. How many times have I said that on the show for the past 11 years? All the time. But I love holidays and traditional foods, getting together with the family, singing songs, and just having a go of the cultural part of it. So this week we celebrated Passover and Easter.
Right.
And I'm not a fan of matzah, the unleavened bread for Passover. It's the instant get constipated food made from refined wheat flour for the most part. And we were having a Zoom Seder like so many people have done all around the world.
Yeah, we actually did that. That was a lot of fun.
We did it and it was wonderful.
Shout out to our cousin Jared Gordon who organized
that. He did, yes. And so we wanted to make some matzah. We didn't have any. And we had einkorn flour, that ancient heirloom einkorn grain flour. And I wanted to make a wheat version and a gluten-free version. I made the einkorn wheat matzah and the oat matzah. And I'm going to post it. I'm going to post the recipes. And you did film it. So we do have a little video of that. It's really very simple to make matzah. And I found that I liked it better than the store variety. It's a little heavier, a little denser, right?
Right, it is. And you used a pizza stone that was given to us by cookbook author and friend
Linda Long.
Linda Long, who wrote one of my favorite books.
Great
Chefs Cook Vegan. Check yes. that book out. That's a beautiful book, especially now that you have the time to...
She had wanted to give us that pizza stone for a long time, and I finally coordinated an event where we could pick it up, and we just used it for the first time.
Yeah, and if you don't know what a pizza stone is, it's this big piece of tile that you put in the bottom rack of your oven. Some ovens will even let you put it right there on the oven, the floor of the oven, the deck of the oven. It's called the deck, if you know what deck ovens are. You pizza chefs out there know what a deck oven is. It's basically a pizza oven, but it makes your home oven like a pizza oven. And Karen cooked the matzah right on this big piece of ceramic tile, which gets really hot in the oven, a lot hotter than it holds the heat. And anyway, it was wonderful, lots of fun. I shot a little video of that, which you can check out. But let's talk about your constipation dream with matzah. Because it was really funny. It's like after you ate the matzah, you had this dream about your mom eating matzah yesterday, or meaning the day before Passover, and getting constipated. And
Yes, and then I was constipated. So I'm rarely constipated, but what gets me constipated is wheat. It's true. I've said on the show I will never eat wheat again, and here I am eating some wheat. But
this was a real dense, packed wheat.
Yes.
It wasn't aerated. It wasn't leavened. It wasn't...
I find that if I have a couple of slices on a rare occasion of Ezekiel sprouted wheat bread, I'm okay.
Right, with the yeast.
And maybe... I'm constantly doing experiments on myself and my gut, but maybe if I sprouted the einkorn grain and then dehydrated it and then made a flour and then...
You can bet your...
Too much trouble.
You can bet your bottom dollar that Karen's going to sprout some einkorn grains one morning. She'll start sprouting those. Well, you sprout your own sprouts all the time, Sprout.
I do. You know what's interesting about this pandemic? I'll tell you. And maybe some of you have experienced this. I know a lot of people aren't comfortable in the kitchen because they don't have the skills. And there's a fear involved. A fear of not knowing what it all is, what you're supposed to do, not having it turn out right. And there have been things I've been wanting to try to make, but without knowing how to do it, there's this lack of momentum, and maybe it is a fear of just not knowing how to do it. So I finally took the plunge with making soy milk. It took decades, and now I'm just getting the hang of it.
Right.
And I've never made matzah in my life. And I made it once, and I could get better at this.
Right. That was awesome. You made the matzah for Passover. And again, let's just preface this by saying neither of us are religious, but we were both raised, as I've always loved to say on the show, Karen was raised Jewish, I was raised Catholic, and we're in therapy. I stole that from a play. Can't take credit for it. But... I made an Easter Sunday dinner, and it was kind of fun.
It was fun. Were you afraid of making any of it?
Afraid?
No, you were pretty well-versed in making marinara.
Yeah, so no, I wasn't afraid at all. But I know what you're saying about being afraid to venture forth in
the kitchen. Something new.
Yeah. And no, it's something that I started on my own many, 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 many years ago when I was a child, and I was fearless in the kitchen, and that was because I was taught to just do it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is how you do it, and you do it. And when you're taught one thing in the kitchen that requires a lot of different components, I guess you can say, like I was taught how to make pasta sauce at a very young age, and that's the chopping of the fresh parsley, the chopping of the garlic, the chopping of the onions, the sautéing. I mean, there's several steps involved.
Not only did you do all the chopping, but you went out to your grandma's yard around the corner and picked the fresh parsley.
I did. My grandparents lived around the corner from us, and we actually grew up on a cherry orchard. It was a very Chekhovian upbringing, and she still had the side yard herb garden. And so whenever my parents were going to make pasta and meatballs together, which they did. This was one of the few times I saw my mom and dad in the kitchen working side by side on actually preparing a meal. They usually work side by side. When it came time to do the dishes, my dad would always assist in that process because both my parents worked. But when the few times that I saw them in the kitchen working together on a meal was when they made the big pot of sauce, which the Italians call gravy, because it has a lot of meat in it. And so anyway, they'd send me out to my grandmother's house to pick the fresh flat leaf parsley, bring it back, and then assist in chopping it all with the garlic. So anyway, I think that kind of cuts the fear down when you are taught to do something like that at a very young age.
You sure. Then... And in the family tradition, not only did you make the sauce, but you made vegan meatballs.
Today, yeah, for Easter at our house, I made vegan meatballs with our recipe for the World Burger. You could take that recipe of grain burgers made with four kinds of different grains, a black rice, a red rice, a brown rice.
Again, and millet.
Millet. That's what I use. But our recipe calls for something called, it's the ancient grain. That's
oh, the taranakum or the kamut instead of brown rice.
Right.
Yeah.
Or in addition to brown rice. Anyway, check it out. If you have any questions, info@realmeals.org. Anyway, they make great meatballs. I added some of your matzah. I ground it up into a matzah flour.
A gluten-free matzah flour.
Gluten-free matzah flour. That acted as the breadcrumbs. Replacing things, you know, veganizing dishes is now my passion. I love to take old recipes like my mom's meatball recipe and veganize it.
Mm.
And we did that.
Beautiful.
With the meatballs. And they were pretty tasty, right?
They were fabulous.
So essentially what I'm saying is for Easter dinner, we had spaghetti and meatballs.
We did. And then I made a crostata di ricotta.
You made a cheesecake.
An almond ricotta cheesecake based on an old Italian recipe.
Ancient Italian recipe.
And we have that recipe at responsibilityandliving.com.
Yes. This is an ancient Italian recipe for cheesecake. And it's... It has a crust. It has an actual pasta frolla, which is basically a pasta that you, like, you know, you make fresh pasta. Well, this is like a rolled out fresh pasta, but you're using it as a crust. And you, the chemical engineer that you are, chemically engineered an egg replacer out of soy lecithin.
Yeah, it's not an unusual thing. The first time I did it, I used a soy lecithin granule. This time I used the liquid soy lecithin, sunflower.
Which darkened up the pasta frolla quite
a bit.
Yeah,
we got the liquid soy liquid sunflower lecithin.
Lecithin.
Because we made Miyoko's butter recipe, her cultured
right.
butter recipe.
We talked about that, didn't we, last week?
And I didn't tell you this, Gary, but honestly, I prefer the lecithin granules in my pastry dough. Then the liquid lecithin. So it's always an experiment here.
Okay, so you get both. You'll use the
yes.
granules for your pastry and the liquid for your
yeah.
vegan butter.
But the lecithin, I find the granules have an eggier taste.
Ah.
An eggy flavor. The good part about the egg flavor, not the sulfur flavor that
right.
I don't like in eggs.
Yeah, a lot of people can't handle that.
Yeah.
That
Anyways,
sulfur flavor.
So we've had a fine time here at Responsible Eating and Living Pandemic Headquarters during this holiday time.
Stay home and make food.
Stay home and make food.
Turn your house into a farmstead, just like our house.
So my fear, it's not really a fear, but talking about making soy milk and yogurt, I now want to venture into making tofu and bean curd skin.
Wow. Why now, is that a fear? That's no fear.
Well, because I've never really done it. We made tofu once, and it wasn't real tofu. It was like a little kit where they gave you this powder that you
mix. I remember that now that you mention it.
With soy milk or something. I forget. Yeah. But it made a very liquidy, silken tofu.
Kind of a disaster.
But I would like to venture into making that. So maybe
if anybody out there knows how to make their own tofu, let us know how to do that.
We've got the Book of Tofu.
I know, but you know, like we waited all those years to find out that you had to boil the water and dump the soybeans in there for the soy.
The Book of Tofu didn't have the best soy milk recipe, which was kind of disappointing. Yeah, so we want to make that. And if anybody has a great source for organic soybeans in bulk, let us know that too.
Yeah, we're going to do some research, but if you've got the line on organic soybeans in bulk, let us know.
Yeah.
Are we almost out of time?
Yeah, basically. We have like a minute or two.
All right. Well, a shout out to Snoop Dogg in our fluff category here, where I come up with some fluffy things to talk about at the end. Some good news. Snoop Dogg, the rapper, the incredible Snoop Dogg, is helping donate 1 million vegan burgers to hospital workers on the front line in California. It's a great story. It's on all of the websites for the veg sites. He's helping Beyond Meat donate vegan burgers to hospital workers on the front line of the coronavirus pandemic. The rapper posted on Instagram, "Beyond Meat has made a pledge to donate over 1 million Beyond Burgers to those in need during these challenging times." He continued, "I'm proud to be part of it." He sent Beyond Burgers over to Martin Luther King Jr. Community Hospital in Southern Los Angeles. And then it goes on. All the stories are about the same. You can hit all the veg sites and read all of the fun stories. There's a lot of good news going around out there. And if you want to share some of it, please do. We'd love to hear it. Next week, we're also going to be talking to some restaurant owners, some veg restaurant owners. We're going to have them on the show and find out how you can help them during their shutdown. A lot of them are still delivering. A lot of them are still offering foods for pickup. Our friends out in San Jose, California, Vegetarian House, big shout out to them. Our friends here on Marty's Vegan Burgers on the East Coast, big shout out to Marty and all of the other. We're going to be talking to you guys next week, so tune in and listen to us chat with Sonny and Marty and a bunch of other folks.
Also, we have a special interview next week. I don't know how we're going to fit it all in, but we will. Robbie Barbaro, who is part of the team of Mastering Diabetes. And he'll be on the program, too.
Well, that'll be exciting.
Well, it is because, especially with COVID-19, people who have chronic diseases like diabetes are more susceptible to the virus wreaking more havoc.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Stay home and cook, stay home and read, stay home and write us at realmeals.org.
Info@realmeals.org
and let us know what you're doing, let us know what you're making. We'll post it on our Instagram page. I just made that up right now. I don't even know how to do that, but I'll figure it out.
Thanks, Gary.
Thanks, Karen. Great show today.
Yeah. Well,
thanks, PRN. Thanks, Gary Null.
Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, the guys down at PRN.
Always. Everybody, have a delicious week.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.